Good morning to each one here this morning. It's good to be gathered together with all of you believers here at Ridgeview. Special greetings too from the Kirkwood congregation. It's good to be back. It's been a while. I think it's about 5 years since I've been here. And it's good to see a lot of the old familiar faces, and it's good to see a lot of new faces that I just don't know who you are, but I'm coming to know a few of you as I meet you here. So it's good to see that. It's good to see church growing. It's good to see everybody on fire for the Lord. It's truly what life is all about. Our focus should center around God and His Word and meeting together with other believers. It's a very vital and important part of a Christian's life. Something that maybe we take for granted too often is the relationship we have with others. I know it's something that I don't always think about. You know, you go to church Sunday morning and Wednesday night, and it's normal. But yet, you have to think about those who live in countries or areas where there is not other believers that they can associate with, or they cannot do it because of the authorities. And it's just something that we should always be thanking God for. For my message here this morning, the title of my message is one word: conformed. You can turn your Bibles to Romans 12. Romans is a very favorite book of mine, especially chapter 12 here. And I realize we just came through Sunday school. The text there was coming out of Romans, the last book we just came through. But there is so much packed in these verses, and I don't think we do an injustice to go back and look at these verses again. As we look at this thought of being conformed, I just want to start out by reading the whole chapter in Romans 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove that what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we being many are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teacheth on teaching, or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another, with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, and bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one towards another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. We think of this word conformed, to be similar in form or type. Now, I'm assuming there's probably some hunters here this morning, and if you take a gun case or a bow case and that has a nice soft foam lining on the inside, you put that gun in there, you close the lid, put it up on a shelf or put it in your closet, and you come back a week later, a month later, open it up, and you take it out, and you'll see in that foam area there, you'll see that foam has conformed to the shape of the gun. You can say, Yeah, I see right where the stock was. You can see the barrel goes up through here. Maybe if it's soft enough, you can see where the trigger or bolt was. Or maybe if you're a carpenter, sir, sometimes there's these cases for tools that you lay it in there and you can say, yeah, I see right where the drill was. You can see where the battery is, the trigger as well. You can say that that foam has conformed, has taken on the image of what you laid in there. It has become like it. It has molded into that shape. I did bring just a small object lesson along here this morning, an illustration. So this morning, this is going to be my mold. It's a very simple little plastic cookie cutter, but this is a mold. There's different things, or there's different, I want to look at being different types. You know, not just anything can be molded. And see, we're called here in this verse in 2. It says, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. So we see that there's different molds that we can become like. It says, be not conformed to the world. So therefore, we get the idea that there is a mold of the world, but be ye transformed, which is also a way of taking on a new shape, be transformed. So you could say there's a mold of Christ as well. So we have two molds, and we need to remember right away here this morning that these molds are not at all the same. They are in two very different shapes. So we're called not to be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, becoming like the mold of Jesus or Christ. In order to become molded, to fit into a mold, we need to have the right consistency. So I have this rock here this morning. And for you children, can this be easily molded? Can I fit this into this shape? Can that be done? No, not very easily. Maybe if I'd have brought a hammer and a chisel and took my time and just beat on this rock, took the edges off, I could maybe get it to fit in there. But it would not be a perfect fit. I don't think it would fill in all the corners. I'm not that good with a hammer and chisel. So this rock is not easily molded. It's not it cannot be easily conformed. It does not easily change. And as I study the scriptures and as I look, I don't know that there's anywhere in the Bible that we as Christians are actually called to be like this rock. There's a lot of times where the Bible refers to Jesus being the rock. He is the one who is unchanging. He is firm. He's solid. Psalms 18:2, the Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler and horn of my salvation, my high tower. And then 1 Samuel 2:2, there is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. You see, God is our rock. He is the one who is unchanging. For many generations, as long as time has been, he has been unchanging. But you see, we as Christians are called to be something of a different than a rock. We're called, if we're going to be conformed, we cannot be solid, stubborn, stuck in our ways. The Lord doesn't want to beat on us with a hammer and chisel to get us to fit into his mold. That's not what he's asking of us this morning. So our tendency of our Christian life should be something of a different texture than a rock. Another thing that the Bible refers about that is conformable and can take the image in it is this water here this morning. This water is very conformable. Water takes the shape of whatever it's inside. If it was not for this cup here this morning, this water would be spreading out across the floor. It flows. It goes into whatever shape it is put in. If I would take this water and try to pour it in this mold, it would take the shape of that mold if I could keep it in there. But it so quickly would just probably flow out the bottom. I'd have a puddle on the floor. You see, in the Bible, there's a number of places, too, that talk about water. James chapter 1, verses 6 through 8. But let him ask in faith, not wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let no man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded mind is unstable in all his ways. You see, we don't want to be the tendency of water or the texture of water in our Christian lives either. In James here, it refers to something as unstable. It's easily pushed about. It flows. It conforms to whatever is around it. Whatever mold you put it in, it'll take that shape. But it'll so quickly move. If there's a small hole in that mold, it will move right on to the next thing. That's not what we as Christians are asked to do either. We're supposed to have a little more stability than that. More structure. A double-minded mind is unstable, the Bible says, in all his ways. Water is unstable. Get a pond, get a large lake, get a little wind blowing, and the waves are going, and it's moving about. It's not solid like the rock, but it's the other extreme. In life, we need to be somewhere in middle ground. Moldable, yet not too changeable. And the Bible talks a number of times about clay. I don't have exactly clay, but I brought along some Play-Doh, which is very moldable this morning. This Play-Doh, I can shape it, I can put it in my hands, and it will take the shape of whatever we make it. And it will hold that shape. You see, this Play-Doh, it takes in very fine details. I can put my thumbprint on there, I can see my fingerprint on this, and I'm guessing if I would let this on the pulpit in that shape, I could probably come back. I know a day later it would look like that. A week later it probably would still look like that. There would probably come a point where it would dry out, start to crack. But when this is put into this mold or into a certain shape, it holds that shape. You see, this is what the Lord wants us to be more like. He wants us to be workable, that he can mold, that we can become shaped into his image, into his mold. You see, Satan would like to push us and conform us into his ways as well. But the Lord wants to work in our lives. In Jeremiah 18:6, O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as this potter, saith the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are you in the hand. In mine hand, O house of Israel. We are to be as this clay in a potter's hands. Our lives are to be in the hands of the Lord, moldable, not so hard, stuck in our ways, unchangeable that he has to use some hammer, and yet not tossed about like water, but yet moldable. Isaiah 45:9, woe unto him that striveth with his master, let the potter shed striveth with the potter sheds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him that fashioneth, What makest thou? Art thy work? He hath no hands. Again, it's referring to, are we to argue with God who is working with us and using us and molding us? Does the clay have power over the potter? We say no. The clay is to be moldable, to be used. The clay, God wants us to be conformed to him, his image, to be like his son Jesus. He wants us to allow him to push us into this mold and continue to work us into this. You see, this is not something that happens overnight. It's not something that we will ever complete as long as we are alive, this side of eternity. It's not something that where we have reached perfection, but it's a ongoing working in our lives where the Lord continues to work. He continues to push. He continues to change to have us become more like Christ. And as we know, we never will reach perfection. But the Lord continues to want to work us into his mold. He wants us to be conformed to him, to take on the shape of what he would have us to be. You see, this is very moldable this morning, and it can take on the shape of exactly what it's pushed into. As I said before, Satan would also like us to be conformed to him. The question is, how or what do we need to do to be more like Christ? And just going down through the rest of these verses here this morning, it gives us very practical teaching on what God wants out of our lives as Christians, as a light in this world. What does he want us to be more like? Or how can we be more like Jesus, more like Christ? And I believe the best way to know how to be more like Christ is just like a bank teller. They know the real thing. They're not trained to know all the counterfeits out there, but they're trained to know the real thing. They know how the real money feels. And so that when there's any fake, no matter what type it is, if it's a new type of counterfeit, they know this does not feel like the real thing. And so for us as Christians, we need to know what the real thing is. And here in Romans, we have it. What is Jesus like? What do we need to be doing? You know, if we are constantly trying to fight the counterfeits that come along, I believe we will eventually lose out, or we will be distracted by that. We need to come back and look at the real mold that Christ wants us to be in. Going into verse 3, we see there that be not proud. Point number one I have is be not proud. To be in the mold of God, we cannot be proud. Proverbs 11:2, when pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. Also Proverbs 8:13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance in the evil way, the froward mouth do I hate. The Lord hates pride. Also, if you look down in verse 16, be of the same mind one to another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. The last phrase there in that verse, be not wise in your own conceits. It's speaking of pride. Be not wise in your own individual opinion is another way of maybe putting it into a little more plain English. Not wise in your own opinion. It's speaking of pride. You know, so often we tend to think we have some of the answers in life. We have some experience. We know what should be done or how it should be done. We raise ourselves up above others. This is a sense of pride that we should not have, that the Lord does not want with us. You see, pride does not get us very far. There is so much that can be learned from others, and others have so much knowledge that to be proud or think that we know everything, when we do that, when we think we have all the answers, we're hurting no one else worse than ourselves. You see, and I think the Lord knows that. Number one, he is the one who has all knowledge and wisdom and gives it to us. And so when we think we have some of the answers, we take away from God as well. But then it also hurts ourselves. There's so much wisdom to be tapped into others that pride is such a hurtful thing to us. Secondly, we see in verses 4 and 5 is to be one body. And we talk of unity. No two people here this morning are the same. And we talked about that a little bit in Sunday school. We don't even think exactly the same. Our thoughts are relatively close here this morning. That's why we associate together. But yet there's still differences between each brother or sister sitting on the bench here this morning. But yet, to be molded into the mold of Christ, we're asked to be unified, to come closer together. And you know what that means? That means giving up of myself and giving up of yourself this morning. Because if we hang on to all of my ideas and opinions, there will not be unity. So that's where we need to find this happy balance between being the rock or being water or being clay, somewhere there in the middle. And it's a lifelong lesson of learning to try to be moldable, to try to work together. And I definitely don't have all the answers for that. But it's something that we're commanded to do, to have a unity. We all are needed for different roles, and we all need to fill those roles this morning. And it speaks here, too, of the body. The church is a body this morning. And if you think of your physical body, you have hands, arms, legs, heart, eyes, ears. And that's the same way the church fits together. There was a song leader here this morning for a reason. And there's a reason they didn't ask me to lead the singing. I wouldn't do a good job. There's somebody who can teach Sunday school. There's somebody who can teach children's classes better than I can. And that's why we all need to fit together. You need to do your part. That brings this unity as one body working together. If your physical body this morning, if your heart decided it's just not going to do its job, how would the rest of your body work? You say, well, it wouldn't. You would stop. Everything else would stop. There are some members of our body that we can maybe do without, or we can get by in life without. I'm not missing any members or limbs, so I don't know exactly what it's like, but I have seen people who have been able to function fairly well minus some things, but yet there's not that completeness there. That's not how they were created to. They can work around it. Same way as the church body this morning. Yes, we can work around some members who are not doing their job. There's some that members that if they don't do their job, there won't be any church service. But here, to be more like Christ, we need to continue to have this unity, this working together, just as your physical body works together. Philippians 2:2, fulfill ye my joy, that ye be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. In 1 Peter 3:8, from another version, says, finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Again, it goes hand in hand with the thing of pride. If we're going to work together, we cannot be lifted up in our own lives. We need to have that humble mind and a unity of heart. Third point is to use your gifts. We see that in verses 6 through 8. Each of us are given different gifts. 1 Peter 4:10, this is from the ESV. It says, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as stewards of God's varied grace. I just like how that explained that. That's why I used that version. I thought it was a little clearer. Use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Allow God to mold us as clay in his hands. God may be asking you to do something you never thought you could do or even wanted to do. But God can make a beautiful vessel out of every lump of clay. Be workable, be moldable. Back to that verse I read, does the clay have the power or the authority to tell the master what it wants to be? We say no. And the same way in our Christian lives, we are to be as clay in the master's hands, molded into whatever he wants us to be. It goes so much against our human nature. We want to have some say in things. We want to say, well, Lord, I want to do this. Can I go here? Or would you please let me do this part of church? But that's not really in our asking. I think the Lord knows our heart. He knows our preferences. But we need to be willing to be molded into whatever he would have. And sometimes, and very often, it will push us outside of our comfort zone. Sometimes we like to just be a lump of clay. I'm not sure why that is, but it's our human nature. To change our form, to grow, to be more of something of beauty, it takes work, and it can be hard to give up our current, or we don't like to be pushed out of our comfort zone. Number 4 is love without pretense. And we see that in verse 9. And it comes from the first phrase there, is that love be without dissimulation. Dissimulation is concealment of one's thoughts, feelings, or character, or pretense. Truly love others, not just putting on a front of love. This is true love from the heart. I meet a fair amount of people as I go through life, and some, there's a lot of very friendly people, and there's sometimes you walk away from a conversation and say, yeah, they were very friendly, but I kind of got the feeling that it was just a front, something they were putting on to make me feel good. That's what this verse is talking about. The love for a brotherhood, if we want to be more like Jesus, more like the Christ, into be conformed into his mold, the love for the brotherhood, love for society around us needs to be truly from our heart. Not just a pretense, not just something we put on out in front, but a true love. Be kindly affection one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. That's in verse 10. John 13:34, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. This is a new commandment, Jesus says here. And we have this very good example of Jesus' life. He says, love others as I have loved you. It seemed, and I'm not sure what's all in that thing of a new commandment that he gives to us, but it's something different. It's supposed to be a love from the heart, as I said before, not just an outward expression, but true love. And if you stop and think about all that Jesus has done for you individually, how he died on the cross, he came from heaven because he loved each of us this morning. Can we not love others? Can we not show others that love of Jesus? Jesus lived this example that we need to follow. Verse 9, it says to hate evil. To hate evil. Proverbs 97:10, ye that love the Lord, hate evil. He preserveth the souls of the saints. He delivereth them out of the hand of the wicked. The two cannot coexist this morning. You cannot be molded and shaped into Satan's mold and into Jesus' mold this morning. They just do not go hand in hand. As it says there in verse 9, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. They do not go together. We need to continue to have a hatred for sin in all parts of it. Not for the sinner, but for the sin itself. We are surrounded by so much sin that sometimes I know in my own life I can find myself becoming accustomed to sin and almost accepting it. But we need to have that hatred for evil. Number 6 is to love good. It's just the opposite of hating evil. Going back to the idea of knowing the true thing, knowing, not trying to figure out all the counterfeits, but knowing the real thing. We're to love good, and if we love good, we will know the counterfeits, or we will learn to hate evil. Hang on to that which is good. Going down to verse 11. As I studied for this message, I would admit that this verse 11 has, I've learned some new things as I studied this verse more deeply. Not slothful in business. And as I used to read across that verse, I thought that it meant, because of the King James Version here, I thought it meant, you know, rise up early, get to work on time, work hard, do a good job for your boss. Not slothful in business. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. That's not exactly what this verse means. Another translation would say, be not slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Not slothful in zeal. The word fervent comes from the Latin word fervens, which means boiling. And that's exactly what that word means in the original Greek. Boiling in spirit. Not cold, not lukewarm. More than hot, we're to be boiling this morning. Was that I think of a Christian who is boiling for Christ. It's not a Christian that is lackadaisical. Now, to explain that word, if you think of the opposites of somebody who is lax, it's somebody who is active, they're dynamic, they're industrious, eager, enthusiastic, lively, pumped, cheerful, chipper, alert, awake, vigilant, wide awake, watchful. This morning, are you a wide awake Christian? Are you boiling for Christ? Are you not slothful in zeal, serving the Lord? Are we being alert? Are we looking around us, seeing what's happening? Just a challenge in my own life to be that boiling for Christ, fervent in spirit. You know, Satan would like to lull us to sleep this morning. He would like us to become just a little lackadaisical. He would like us to sit back, take it easy, not worry about the sin and evil that's around us, maybe even let a little bit of it creep into our own lives or into our congregations. That's not the mold that Christ wants for us this morning. It's not where he's pushing us into. We're to be wide awake and alert. Number 8 is rejoice in hope. We see that in verse 12. We have a hope, but are others seeing that in our lives? Are others seeing the joy that we have because of what Christ has done for us? I think we as a Christians need to continue to grow in that, in my own personal life at least, is to be of a more joyful person. Is your life appealing to others around you in society? You know, there's many hurts, sadness, depression, despair that sin brings if we allow ourselves to be pushed into Satan's mold. That comes along with it. It looks glamorous at the beginning, but as life goes on, those things come after. But if we don't have something more to offer to society around us, to our children, is there any reason why they should allow themselves to go through the heartache or the pain of being pushed into the mold of Christ? But if we have that joy in our lives, because of what Jesus has done for us, because of him living inside us, and if it's something that is appealing to others around us, rejoice in hope. Psalms 32:11, be glad in the Lord and rejoice, ye righteous, and shout for joy, all ye that are upright in heart. Have that joy. Psalms 35:9, and my soul shall be joyful in the Lord, it shall rejoice in his salvation. Number 9 is instant in prayer. That also comes out of verse 12 there. It says, continuing instant in prayer. If we want to be more like Christ, if we want to be pushed into his mold, if we want to let the Lord work on our lump of clay, we need to continue to go to him in prayer. And it seems as you look at this verse here that patience and prayer go together. Your prayer takes faith. We speak audibly to someone we have never seen, and we believe that he hears us. We believe that he will change things in our lives. And in my life, that takes faith. And it takes patience, because the Lord does not always answer right away. You know, we live in a society where things are now. If it takes more than a day or two to get to your door, or if you can't get food within 10 or 15 minutes, it's too slow. We've grown accustomed to that, especially my generation that has grown up with things instantly, the push of a button, flip of a switch, lights are on, things are heated, things are happening. But the Lord does not operate that way in prayer. Things don't happen right away. But we do need to believe and trust that the Lord hears our prayers and he answers our needs. Let's not lose hope that he will take care of our needs and our wants. Let's bring them to him. Bring our heart's desires to him. He does hear us this morning, and I believe he does. And he will work things out. Oftentimes, if you look back across your life or situations, you can see where the Lord has worked. Prayer is not to no avail. Let's be instant in prayer and have patience with it. In verse 13, point number 10 is given to hospitality. In Titus 1:8 it says, "But a lover of hospitality, a lover of good men, sober, just, holy, temperate." In 1 Peter 4:9, "Use hospitality one to another without grudging." We think of hospitality, we think of somebody who is generous, friendly, pleasant environment, neighborly. They're willing to serve others. They're giving to others. Thinking more of other people's needs and desires than their own. We tend to be so self-focused, but God asks us to be focused more on others. We like to be served. We like things handed to us. We like to be taken care of. It's our human nature. And if you ever question that, I'm assuming it's the same here in Missouri as it is back in Pennsylvania. But back in Pennsylvania, it seems like there is continually more and more restaurants being built all around us. And you can say, why is it? I believe it's because people like to be served. They like to go sit down and have somebody wait on them, bring them their food, bring them their drinks, their water, and they're willing to pay 3 or 4 times more than you would for something at a grocery store just to be served. When I'm in my own home, I need to go get my own water or, you know, help set the table or take care of the children. That's what we're called to do. We're called to be hospitable to others, to look after others' needs. And just remember, as much as you enjoy being served, other people enjoy being served as well. So there needs to be some give and take on that. It's laying down of ourself. It goes hand in hand with our selfishness. But we're called to serve others. Number 11 is live peaceably with others. And we see that in verses 14 through 19. There's a lot of things packed in those verses, but the overall idea is to live peaceably with others, to get along with those who do not agree with you, those who even hate you or are strongly opposed to what you have to say or doing. Matthew 5, verses 38 and 39, "And ye have heard that hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also." There's a quote I came across that says, "Show respect to people who do not even deserve it. Not as a reflection of their character, but as a reflection of yours." Let me read that again. "Show respect to the people who do not even deserve it. Not as a reflection of their character, but as a reflection of yours." It's a choice that we have this morning. We don't have much power in changing how other people feel about us or what they say about us or what they do to us. But we do have a choice in our response and our reaction to them. As we look at Jesus' life, as we look at words here in the Bible, we can see the mold that he wants us to be. And he asks us to love them, to live peaceably with them. If we want to be more like Christ, we need to allow him to work on our lump of clay and push us into that mold. It's a continual growing. Verses 20, 21, and point number 12 is heap coals of fire. Goes right hand in hand with living peaceably. But more than just to live peaceably, we should do good in return to those who mistreat us. Return good for evil. Show the love of Christ to others who do not deserve it. Remember how Jesus treated those who did him such an injustice. He never said angry words. He never had any hatred towards them. I know he was the perfect example, but that's what we're trying to be more like here this morning. You cannot change how people treat you or what they say about you. All you can do is change how you react to it. So my challenge for each of us here this morning, as we looked at Romans 12, some very practical teaching on how we can be more like Christ, is that we would let the Lord keep working us into his mold. Be pliable, be moldable, be willing to be moved out of shape or molded into his shape. These changes will not take place overnight. Neither will we ever get to the place on this side, on earth, where we will be we'll be done with the Lord molding us. This is something that continues all of our lives. It's a lifelong change of being conformed to Christ. Because if we're not being conformed to Christ this morning, I believe we're starting to be molded and conformed to the world. Let's kneel before the Lord in prayer.